This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2020, held in Belleville, Pennsylvania on March 6 and 7.
Good afternoon. I know this is the worst slot of time of the day. Welcome here. And I suppose they made it clear this workshop is not like the other workshop. Number one, Gerald was here. And secondly, this is more focused on principals, not on school board members. So, in all honesty, I think they made that clear up front. I asked them to clarify that. So if you did not understand that and you want to shift to a workshop that is for board members, I certainly would not be offended at all. So, surely, I'm offering that sincerely. So I took the blurb that was given me 48 hours ago and tried to work off of that blurb quickly and make a little outline to guide our thoughts. And from what I understand, this is to be kind of the nuts and bolts of principal work. This is not stepping back, looking at it from a broader perspective. This is the work of facing the issues as a principal. Now, obviously, I'm going to speak out of my experience and my situation. That's always a worry of a speaker. Some of you are on-site principals, and some of you are off-site principals. Large school, small schools, and so the dynamics, I might say some things, and you say, I don't understand that at all. That's not how it works for me. And I understand that, and I want to open it to discussion as we go along. Different questions, maybe, or in this situation, it would just be so different. Where I am, or my culture, etc., and I want to be sensitive to that. And so some of these things I realize are, again, unique to the culture in which I'm teaching. How many are off-site principals, meaning you are not there all the time? Okay. And how many are there that you're there all the time? So it looks like it's close to half. All right, well, let's jump right into this, dealing effectively with the who am I question. So some of this, of course, was answered in the other workshop when Gerald talked about it. Your job description, right? And I like how he hammered the job description helps drive what are you to do, what are you not to do, how do you know what your job description is when you overstep, understep. We'll talk maybe a little bit about that, but that's not, again, the focus. What I'd like to look at here for just a few minutes, and that is some things that are, again, hard to define who am I as principal that are outside of the job description. See, if I don't understand and think about this carefully, I'm going to be, I think, a couple things that can happen. I might be defensive of my position. I might be protective of my position rather than seeing myself as truly a servant in the community. The little saying I put under the title, you've got to love your people more than your position. And when being a principal or an administrator becomes an identity, who am I? I'm a principal. We start to get pretty touchy when things aren't going well, right? Because I kind of own this thing. So I can over-own it, I can under-own it. Like somebody said, there's just a lot of ditch and very little road. So true of many subjects, and it's certainly true in leadership positions. And so I'm going to probably numerous times kind of refer to, well, here's the one side, and here's the other side, and hopefully we weave down the middle. All right. Who am I? I'm not the savior of every situation. And some of you, I know, were at a workshop recently where I spoke, and so I'm sorry. I think I'm going to say a few of the same things. I was just stressed when I saw you walk in here. But anyhow, you're not the savior of every situation. In fact, you're not the savior of any situation. And there again, when we try to own things or a sense of responsibility that are beyond what's healthy, I'm going to be frustrated. If I must fix this problem, I'm almost like, this is my problem, and I got to take care of it, and I got to fix it, and fail to realize there are factors outside of school, components and parts and pieces that I don't understand that I'm not responsible for. And so there's sometimes things that I simply need to give to God and let it there. Do you know what I'm talking about? All right, I'm going to soon see people nod, and I'm just trying to make sure I'm getting all this right. No, I'm just kidding. I say sometimes it's good to go to workshops mid-afternoon. You know what it feels like for your students, right? Gives you a little bit of empathy for them. All right, so I'm not the savior of every situation. That is not, again, to call us away from responsibility. And sometimes we're tempted to do that and say, not my problem. I mean, I can't do anything about it. But there's sometimes we need to actually say that. I don't know what to do about it. That is outside of my sphere of responsibility. Because there's two words that need to go together here, and that is authority and responsibility. And I think about this pretty often. You know, sometimes we wish we would have some authority because we would like to take responsibility, like a church, you know, or after church. And those little students can look at you and smirk, and you can't do anything about it. Although just a few hours before, they would have been fully under your authority, and they were your responsibility because you had authority. But the minute they walk out the door and they pull out in the school van and they wave at you, you know, they're waving goodbye. They're no longer under your authority, and they're not your responsibility anymore. And so when we try to take responsibility for things that we haven't been given authority for, we're very frustrated. So I just want to encourage you to think about that. If you weren't given responsibility or authority by the school board, or it simply falls outside of the range of what you can do as a principal, you're not responsible. That doesn't mean that there'll never be opportunity that sometimes you have to speak into the life of the student, but you're not responsible. And some of that we'll touch on in various ways later. Another answer to the who am I question is one of my responsibility is to empower the teacher to do what they should and can do. Here's the overreach again of principals. You know, sometimes it's just easier for principals to reach into the classroom, into the situation, and just shut it down. Just take care of it. So this might be middle grades, and there's a problem with this, there's a problem with whatever, and well, you know what, why don't I come in and talk to the students? You ever do that? It gets pretty quiet, doesn't it? You walk in the classroom, all right, students, I'm going to talk to you a little bit. And you know, it can be tempting, can I even feel a little bit good, can't it? Because you're in a position where you can kind of just shut that thing down. You know, your teacher told me, you have a problem with whispering in this room and communicating. And you know what? It's got to stop. I'm going to check with her. It gets about this quiet. I'm going to be checking back with her. And if she says this hasn't stopped, guess what? I'm going to be back again to talk to you. All right? At least for the day. We're tempted to do that sometimes as an easy way out, is use the weight of our authority to kind of shut things down, to correct problems. Our job is to empower the teacher to get the job done. And I can think back of times where I've overstepped in a way to rescue the situation, I thought, and later realized, you know what? Really, it was a teacher's job, and I should have helped that teacher put the weight on the situation or make the change instead of sort of taking over. All right? Because it can even be offensive to a teacher where they just were asking for some help and, wow, he sure took over. So who am I? We are called to empower the teacher where we can. And again, there's some exceptions that we'll talk about here as we move along. Any questions about that? I do want you to feel free to ask questions. Or raise your hand at any time and say, I didn't quite understand what you meant. All right, let's go into issues, because from what I'm understanding, we're supposed to talk about dealing effectively, that's a scary word, with issues. What are things that we can do? How can we handle situations to hopefully move things forward in a positive direction? Disrespect, again, I'm going off of the list I got. So what is the principal's job with working with disrespect in the school? Give me some things. Would you please help me out? As a principal, you're stepped back. This isn't a disrespect towards you, disrespect in the school. What are your comments? Or maybe you feel like you don't face this in your school, and that's marvelous. Keep it up.
Providing a good structure that encourages a culture of respect.
Okay, very good. So trying to back away, and what is the reason for the disrespect? Is there a structural problem that's creating frustration? Good point. Anything else? What are reasons for disrespect? Give me a few, and we'll try to work with them individually. Why is there disrespect in our schools? We're Christian schools. Come on. Give me some reasons. Yes.
Sometimes it starts at home.
All right. Sometimes it starts at home. And they're just bringing what God said to school. And it's obvious it's being fed at home. What do you do about that?
Call it and fix it.
How? You walked into that one.
No, I was feeding off.
I know. I realize. It's a very difficult one. When you know the problem, at least partially, is in the home. Now, I would like to suggest, though, do you not believe that most of our students, again, I'm making a pretty general statement, most of our students want to come to school and respect the teacher? If you don't believe that, you're going to set up your school accordingly to catch them and trap them. And I've told students many times, you want to play the cat and mouse game? I guess we can. I mean, I can be the cat, you can be the mouse, but you know what? None of us want to play that game. You want to? Oh, no, of course. What else are they going to say other than no? Of course. And say, I don't want to either. I want to have a trusting relationship. Yes, I'm your authority, but I want to trust you and not be jumping around corners to try to catch you and corner you. So I have my job to do, to not overly be watchful. You have your job to do. I've told the students many times, I did in the last couple days. One particular case was outside of my room and just said, you know what? I believe you want to come to school with a sense of trust, that we trust you, right? Yeah, of course. Whose job is this? My job. Okay, I'm going to make your job easy. I'm going to start trusting you. I want to trust you. You can build trust in 48 hours after being suspended. But guess what? It is in your court, and don't say we're picking on you. You show that you want to build trust again. So, I got away from your question because it's too hard of a question. But let's believe that most of our students want school to go well. And when we have a lot of suspicion, we can end up creating a problem just by that suspicion, and they play into it, which validates our suspicion. And after a while, we're playing a game that nobody wants to play. And it's partly our fault as teachers. All right, disrespect. Other reasons for disrespect. What about when it really, there's something with the teacher that it's understandable these students are not respectful? I've said already, teaching school is 80% personality. Now that's a stretch, but it's to make a point. There are some teachers that just don't have that rapport with the students. They just don't have that personality. They don't draw students in. And you're sitting back in administration and you're watching this unfold. Maybe it's a new teacher. Maybe it's a teacher who's very academic and just doesn't connect with the children. And there's a swirl of frustration and disrespect. What do you do? I want some answers again. That one's maybe in some ways a little easier than the home problem, although it's still difficult. Do you ever acknowledge to the student that you understand their frustration? Yes? How? Well, that's really difficult, isn't it?
Well, where's the balance between respect and submission? You can submit to someone you don't respect.
Okay, that's a very good point. What were you going to say?
I was going to say maybe talk to them about the fact that different people are different. Mm-hmm. So without trying to put them down, say, you, especially if they're a high schooler, mm-hmm. Different teachers are going to be different. Mm-hmm.
Okay, a very good point. And you know, that's being honest with them, and we'll gain more by being honest than being dishonest. Be intellectually honest. And I've done that with high school students already. I said, you know what? You know, I understand some of the frustration. There's difference of people. New teachers sometimes need to find their way. But guess what? You never can talk disrespectfully about your teacher. Do you agree with that? Yeah, of course I do. It's never right to sow disrespect among your friends or to say ugly things. Do you agree with that? Yes. And so, you know, things will smooth out. Just give a little bit of time. Work well. Do your job of showing respect to the teacher, and it'll probably take some pressure off of the teacher. I've had students already say, well, it just feels like we're just being watched, you know, like, and well, you know what? Make sure you're not given a reason for the teacher to to be watching you. And again, you're not telling fourth, fifth graders this. This is older students, but I think them feeling understood is important, especially in the upper grades. And you're not saying it, oh, well, you know what, I agree, he's a bad teacher. Well, I can understand your frustration, but hey, guess what? You know, you can't really be disrespectful. No, you're covering for the teacher in a reasonable way, and yet not to the point of just not acknowledging that, you know, there are some challenges that you're facing, and but we're going to work through this together. And we need your help to make this work. I know it's tough. And there you are talking to a student outside of the teacher's presence. And I struggle with this one a little bit. I don't think you should do this often. I did this fairly recently. It was a new teacher, more middle grade range, and the teacher just felt that, boy, the student just got disrespect. And I thought I maybe knew a little bit what's going on, but asked permission from the teacher. Can I talk to your student just a few minutes and just try to understand what's going on? Sure, he said, that's fine. And he was stressed. So I pulled the boy in the office. What's going on? He told me a little bit, and I said, so do you feel like the teacher is, that kind of makes fun of you sometimes? And he just broke into sobs, big time sobs, and yeah, that's what was happening. And I thought I'd picked it up just a little bit, that the teacher, in frustration to the child asking sort of ignorant questions, kind of turned to the rest of the students and said, what did I just get done explaining? You know, and not realizing he's hurting that child. And so I had to go back to the teacher there, and that was part of the teacher's problem. And he was very open and honest about it and apologized to the student. I said, yeah, that's what you need to do. You need to go to the student and say, I'm sorry that I've related to you in that way. So there are times a teacher does need to be worked with to help them understand how tender of a heart the child has. Those who've taught a few years, doesn't that impress you more and more as you get older? How tender of a heart most of these students really have. And sometimes teachers in their frustration are careless with saying things that are hurting the child. The child responds, it looks like disrespect, when it was really the teacher who started part of the problem, at least. Any other comments about that? Or questions? Yes.
So is someone, a student coming to school and creates a lot of aggravation around English because they don't get it, is that disrespect or? Because I'm dealing with a situation like that right now. So is it the teacher? Because he probably will tell the teacher that they're not doing a very good job of teaching it to him.
Those are the things that want to make you just quit, right? They really do. I know what that feels like. Because you realize there's truth to what the student is saying. The teacher doesn't have a hand on what they're saying. So they're skirting around trying to explain it. They really don't get it. The child's sitting there frustrated. Who takes the report card home with a bad grade on it, right? I mean, the child feels it's the teacher's fault and they really aren't doing a good job. Do you have any comments? Or you're asking a question, I guess.
Well, I was asking a question, but I'm kind of in the middle between, is it partially the teacher or is it partially the child with a disrespect issue toward the subject or toward the teacher? So it's almost multi-legged.
Right.
And it makes it even more challenging.
Right. Yes, you're exactly right. There's so often multiple layers to the question, right? Sometimes a child does have a bad attitude, especially, is it toward English? Is that the subject that it is? A bad attitude toward that, the teacher maybe doesn't quite know how to navigate through it, especially in the harder things of, you know, verbals, et cetera, and they're just hoping to get through it, and the child is frustrated. Going to the teacher, though, I think sometimes you need to do as principal. So just say, do you feel like you understand this? Do you want to talk about this lesson to try to lay it out in a better way? Would you do that as principals? Go to the teacher and try to help them with the subject if they're struggling, especially if there's multiple students that are frustrated and the parents might be saying, my child comes home and is just confused. Again, you don't take one phone call and build a case on it, but well, it's a good question. I think going to the teacher, there can be a place certainly for that. Emotional needs. Dealing effectively. This is students' emotional needs. And I'm pretty passionate about this. I don't know how to navigate this question. I think this is one of the harder questions, even more difficult than the question of disrespect and maybe academic. I would encourage you as principals to do all you can to understand the homes that are sending their children. Do all you can. Work hard to understand the homes. How many of you are teaching in schools where you have patrons that are not from the congregation where you attend? Is that okay? A lot of you do. That adds some real complexities, doesn't it? Because you're seeing some things that are happening and you're frustrated with a student, but guess what? There's a whole reason for this emotional need that you don't know really anything about. And that, the longer I teach, I think the more that weighs on me. That I help my teachers navigate difficult situations with a carefulness of what I say, but sometimes just saying enough that they realize that, you know what, this child is coming to school very distressed. Are there questions or comments about that? I don't know where to go with that, because to me that's a very emotional component of being an administrator, trying to navigate through that. Because this, well, let me, are there any questions or comments, first of all?
Do you take a troubled student? Do you have meetings with the parents as principal?
Okay.
Yes. Is that something you do?
Absolutely. Usually with the teacher.
Very helpful, mm-hmm. because some one-on-one open up, listen mm-hmm. to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you do that as principals? Probably. And actually going back to the respect, the disrespect problem, where you bring the student in with the parents, with the teacher, and try to figure out what is going on. We've done that recently, and I thought it was very important. It was insightful for the parents to hear your heart and for you to hear the parents' heart and for the child to be sitting there and giving them affirmation of, you know, we care about you, we want to make this work, but here are some things that are happening that really do need to change. So, yeah, very, very good point.
I think it's nice when you work with that as parents and teachers or as school board or whatever, and it can also be a situation that came up as far as being a parent taking the child's side and being offensive as far as a principal wanting to gather a meeting like that together, mm-hmm. taking an offense to whatever what the situation is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The emotional component there. I find myself sometimes in a place where we're a fairly large school, 11 churches represented, and so there are just a few where we can point to and say, you don't want to judge a family, but you almost say this family is dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find yourself at a point there, though, in order to protect the students, you almost are afraid to go to the parents? I'm just curious if anybody's ever run into that, and how do you face that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're jumping in with both feet there. That's a very good question, and that's a hard question, because depending on the nature, the parent is not in a position to come to a meeting. And the children might tell you things that you don't want to tell the parents that the child said. And sometimes you don't know if it's true or if it's not true. I mean, one of our students just told a teacher recently, she said, I just didn't know my mom can yell like that. Am I going to go call that parent in and say, you yelling at your children? You know? See, I know enough about the home to know that it's probably is true. And in that case, in working with the church leadership is often the route I would go. Just call the leader and say, I'm sure you're aware of the trouble. Any advice for us? How do we navigate this? What should we tell the student? Do you have more comment on that? But I mean, it's a very good point. Anybody else have a comment on that? When you know the child's need, but you do not feel safe in going to the parent. Sometimes you simply can't. I mean, I got a boy in my classroom who his mother has left home again, just 2 weeks ago. Oh, where am I supposed to go with that? And talking to him, he said, well, you know, it's hard, but, you know, she had left us for years, and so, you know, she came back and left again, so, you know. Heart just bleeds for those situations. You can't, there's nowhere to go there with the parents because of the dysfunctional home. You know, we have to understand there are more dysfunctional homes than what meets the eye. And if not dysfunctional, seriously deficient. And all homes are deficient at some level, I realize. And we don't want to quickly say dysfunctional, but deficient. And we all have our deficiencies, but some of those, we see it in the emotional needs of those children. And to be gracious and patient, and that's just one, and this might sound bad to you, I don't know, But I do struggle a little bit with schools that have strong policies on here's how we discipline for every offense. Maybe you have that. You do this, here's what happens. You do this, here's what happens. It's consistent, it's fair. Is it fair? Is it fair? Doesn't the Bible say that with whom much is given, much is required? And little is given, little is required? More stripes, fewer stripes, not? So can't we carry that principle into our schools? And again, principles. The more you watch and listen and observe, the more you can guide your teachers through some tough things by carefully sharing that, yes, this is a really stressful situation. Just very recently talking to a teacher and tried to navigate what I said because I'm quite knowledgeable of the home situation. And she just said, thanks for sharing. She said, that just makes so much more sense with what I'm facing, with the insecurity of my boy. Say enough. You don't have to give details, but you can say, there's a lot of stress going on. Yes. So, again, lots of ditch. Yes.
So one thing that I've done with our teachers is, and this is going to be a new concept to some of you, but I try to teach our teachers about root system and helping them understand that every child that comes into their schoolroom has a mom and a dad that actually have a root system. And just to explain without going into major detail, but a root system is where the mom might be controlling, the dad mm-hmm. might be passive, and et cetera. So you have those two things bleeding into a child. And so if the teacher can understand that mm-hmm. they have a root system from their parents and mm-hmm. how they were raised, mm-hmm. that helps them as they look at students to not always have to know the home situation, but this is emotion is where that ties into mm-hmm. a lot, is understanding that there's multiple factors mm-hmm. that they're gleaning from. And it might even be as deep as grandparents that mm-hmm. are in their lives a lot.
Right.
So there's multiple legs that are actually tying into their behavior, and that has nothing maybe to do with dysfunction at all.
Mm-hmm.
It could be even other siblings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Relationships are complex, aren't they? Emotional needs. You know, again, I'm just so impressed over and over how impossible it is for me to see life exactly like somebody else. You just cannot. You cannot fully put on somebody else's glasses. You might know somebody very well, but how they're looking at it and how they're perceiving it is just different. And every child comes with not what they're responsible for emotionally necessarily. It's what has gone into who they are. And they see life through those lenses. We see life through our lenses. And when we're just sure that we got the best lenses, these work, we need to be gracious, very compassionate, and pretty flexible. All right, let's move on. Just checking my schedule. This is 3:45. All right, so let's move right along. Academic needs, I'm not going to say much about that. I think I'll pick up a little bit of that instead, maybe under teacher morale. So I'm going to go right into teacher morale. Avoiding the emotional trap while providing teacher care. Teacher care is important. It's one of the reasons that teachers quit. They feel they are alone. You know that if you were a teacher, especially in a small school. We're here doing our thing. Parents drop the children off. I'm left with the problems. They're out the door. The dads are running businesses. The school board's busy. And I'm left here day after day. Teacher care is huge. As a principal, that you are responsible to give an appropriate amount of teacher care. There are traps with this, though, especially men relating to the women teachers. And I'm going to say this very kindly, and I hope I would not offend anybody that's in this room. I'm just wanting to be very honest. There are times there are single women in our schools that I think we can unintentionally create an emotional bond that is unhealthy. Not intentional. But it's just that kindness, just that caring spirit, just that look in the eye, that smile. We didn't mean to be inappropriate. We didn't mean to be flirty. But to the receiver can be interpreted as a little emotional gratification. Does that make any sense to you? And I've worked with quite a few women, probably dozens actually, through the years. We have a pretty large school. I think there's 12 in our faculty, and of course there's changeover. And I've watched this, and it burdens me that I'm careful in giving teacher care. I know they have a life outside of school. I know there's weights and burdens they bring to school, but it's really not my job to offer compassion and care. Somebody else needs to do that, not me as an administrator whatsoever. Am I being fair with that? Maybe as a man, it could be my wife that builds a close relationship with a teacher. But it's not my job to sit down and say, so, how's it going? I know you lost your mother. You finding your way with that? It's not my job. Leave the door open. Keep it professional. Keep it businesslike. Doesn't mean there's not friendship, but that friendship really should be felt in a circle when the whole faculty's together, not on a one-on-one. Again, it can be innocent. It can be not so innocent as well, though, men. But it can be innocent, but still interpreted differently than what you intended, out of just simply some carelessness and just kind of just a very friendly personality. And again, we vary as administrators on this. So teacher care, so important, but the trap, I really just want to emphasize. So let's move right into finding a path forward. Teacher morale, they're discouraged or frustrated. You are responsible to not fix the problem, maybe, but find a way forward. And this has really impressed me this school year. There needs to be a way forward. My brother one time was teaching and needed a substitute, and as the school board member left who had substituted, he just kind of threw up his hands as he went out the door and said, I'm glad it's your problem, you know, because he didn't have a good day substituting. He saw the needs of the students, and it was tough. I visited the school. This was many years ago, and I saw things that, wow, what a challenging situation. But for the school board member to walk out, glad to turn it back to you, a young 20, 21-year-old single man. Yet he's walking out as a school board member saying, I can't handle this. I'm sure you can. That's cruel. That's ridiculous. That's why teachers quit. Teachers quit when they feel there is no path forward. Now, that's different than fixing the problem. We want to fix the problem, and we can't always fix the problem in the moment. But we must find a path forward. I got a call a month or two ago from a father of one of the teachers, a single young lady, saying, look, my daughter came home in tears. She can't take this anymore. I felt horrible as administrator. I knew it was a problem, but I didn't realize it was quite that big of a problem. I thought I was taking care of and helping, but I wasn't helping enough. I apologize on the phone. Listen, I assure you tomorrow morning I'll meet with her. We'll try to find a way forward to at least survive the next day and the next day until we can kind of figure out what to do. And we're still kind of navigating through that question as to what to do probably 2 months later. It's not always just fixing the problem. It must be a way forward. The teachers must come to school saying, there is a way forward today, rather than they're just completely stuck with whatever they're facing. And for us as administration to walk away saying, well, we're really not sure what to do either. You know, I don't know what to say. Wow, I'll pray for you. Wow, sorry about that. That is really tough. And we just leave like that. We cannot do that. We must find a way forward and ask them, are you satisfied that at least for tomorrow you can navigate your way through this? Or today? Yes. Okay. And then follow through. Pick up with it. How's it going? What's happening? Is the stress less? And in that case, I got involved enough that I checked up in that room twice a day for 1 week, just dropping down. It doesn't take long, but of course, I'm there all the time. I know if you're not there as an administrator all the time, you can't do that. Just drop in and knocking on the door. How's it going? Is everything okay? Because I knew it was a very fragile situation, and I didn't want to lose a teacher in the middle of the year if I could at least try to help. And then slowly we adjusted. Again, we're not fixing the problem. We're trying to find a way forward. And so keep that difference in mind. Parental frustration, guarding the trust, I wrote down. So what should frustrated parents do? Well, number one, let me just talk about this guarding the trust concept. You must be a trustworthy administrator. The parents must have confidence, not in that everything you do and say is perfectly right. That's never going to happen. But they should know and they should trust your heart, all right? Can we separate this? It's one thing to not trust somebody's judgment. It's entirely something different to not trust your heart. Isn't that how you face with, don't you feel that way sometimes about your board and about leadership, church leadership? I don't always trust the judgment of church leadership, but I hope I trust their heart. That's hugely different. And you must give your parents a reason to trust your heart. And part of that is knowing what to do with private information and confidential information. And the parents talk to you, they spill their frustration, or you see into the home, or at least you think you see into the home, and see a very, some serious needs that you know how to handle that understanding. You must be considered a trustworthy person in your community. Again, doesn't mean we never make a mistake in judgment. We surely do. But our patron body surely should not be saying, I don't think they like my child. I think they have it in for our family. I don't think we have the social status. He doesn't like us. Or, you know what, he's not confidential. You tell him something, you share your need, you share a need on a personal level or about your child, and after a while, the rest of the faculty knows it. You will undermine your opportunities tremendously. Back to the question of what should a frustrated parent do? Now, Gerald's not here for me to ask him, so please don't think I'm countering what Gerald said. I do want to ask him about this. If you get a call, should you say, did you talk to the teacher? And if not, I'm hanging up the phone, go talk to the teacher first. What's your policy in your school? Or maybe you don't have a policy. Maybe you're going to get one after today. That's what it is.
I would state it in our handbook to follow that protocol. I don't know if it always works.
Okay. To call the teacher first.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you make a difference as to what is the issue?
Not in the handbook.
Okay, see, there's I would tend to make a difference. And I want to say this carefully because, again, all cultures are different, and I'm not trying to say this is the right way. But I would personally make a difference between a frustrated parent who calls at 3:15, and you know there's some of these around, and she's all worked up because of whatever happened on the playground. It was not fair, and Johnny got hit again or was mocked again, and the teacher and the parent is all frustrated. I would rather that phone call comes to me than to the teacher. So there's a difference when the parent is asking, okay, so there's a homework load here, a homework issue. Can my child, what do you see? Sure, that's fine. Or this happened today. But when it's a parent that is going to put emotional weight on the teacher in terms of blame and frustration, I appreciate when those calls come to me. And I will always thank them for calling me. And I just love when patrons say, I'll call different times and say, look, here's what my child said happened today. I don't know. I hate to call the teacher because it sounds like blame. But boy, this did happen now a number of times. It seemed like the teacher actually got upset today. And according to my child, got all red in the face and was really frustrated. And I got people here that know me or know our patron body. I'm not thinking of an example in that one. But I'm saying that kind of a case. I trust you to do what you want. You don't have to talk to the teacher. You don't have to call me back. I'm just saying what my child said. Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. I value that. I'll check into it. And there's times I never go to the teacher because I know the child. And, this sort of makes sense that this accusation toward the teacher is coming in. And you just watch and it'll be okay. Other times, I will go to a teacher and say, I did get a call from a parent. Wondered about this. They were not trying to hurt you and go around your back. They didn't want to say something. They were not angry at you, but here's something we need to look at. Is that making sense to you? I know, where's the fine line? I didn't say where it is. I don't know where it is, right? It's there somewhere, though, where you are a trusted person in the community. When the parent is frustrated that they can call you, you will hear it out and do what you think is best with it. But when it's a nitty-gritty thing that is about the child, say, well, could you call the teacher? And so, again, it's a little dicey, but I'm particularly talking about when a parent is frustrated with a teacher and it's personal. Many teachers can't take a lot of personal weight and accusation from the patron body, especially if they're young, insecure, trying to find their way only to get the sense that, you know what, the parents are not happy with me. Because you know what some parents will say? And I talked to a few other moms, and they all feel the same way. I call that gathering weight. You know, here and here, and then you make that statement. Those kind of patrons, they need to be confronted if that's what they're doing. That's where you need to call the pop, if there's a pop in the home, and say, listen, can we work through this somehow? Because the teacher didn't know how to interpret what was said. We want you to be honest. We want to hear it. But can we work through this in a way that won't burden the teacher and make, you know, just navigate your way through it? Keep the communication open and safe. There again, go and follow up on those conversations. I find that to be such a hard thing to do. I have enough of phone calls to make. Again, we have a large school, 100 and some students, so I make pretty many phone calls, two or three last night. So it happens a lot, and those are usually emergency phone calls, right? Because that's what we specialize in, handling the problems. Oh, to follow through in positive phone calls, keeping it open. We talked the other week at church. You shared a concern. How's your child feeling? Is it better? That means so much to patrons. So no news is good news, not necessarily. You be the aggressive one to keep that line open and make those phone calls to the parents. Is it okay? Or even better yet, your child is doing better. And we really appreciate what you as parents are doing to help that child. And I got a couple situations that as we move into next week, having worked through some things the last few days, I need to do that. I told the parents, I'll try to stay in touch. I need to do that. Not wait till they call me. I need to go to the parents and say, I see your child is definitely doing better with that. Thank you for what you're doing at home. Now, maybe they're not doing much, but I'll encourage them to do something then, right? All right, last of all, for a few minutes, board non-involvement. Well, Garrett was supposed to take care of all of that somewhere by all the things he said or in other sessions about the board. Let me just say a few things. Building confidence in their role. This is a frustration for a long-term administrator and a lot of changeover on the board. They finally see you as the man, right? You're the man. And no news is good news. It's in good hands. And you know what? That's typically, most of our schools are erring on that side, right? Instead of micromanaging, they are stepping back. That's typically the frustration in our schools, that the board is not involved enough. Well, that can be partly our fault if we don't build confidence in their role. We ask them questions. We ask their advice. We show appreciation for what they are telling us rather than, you know, how many chuckles does it take to shut them down? Not a lot. Just like, oh, that would never work. I can tell you were never a teacher. Well, they're not going to want to give a contribution. They're not going to. Many school board members are intimidated already by experienced teachers, right? And they might say, well, I don't know. I never taught school. Say, yeah, that's okay. It's okay you never taught school. I still value your input. And you can say, well, you know what? I'm not quite sure if that would be. Appreciate that thought, but maybe. Here's one thing, though, to think about. Carefully navigate the conversation if it isn't practical or if it really, you know, wouldn't work. But never scoff it. Never laugh at all. And worse yet, say anything in your community about how your board just doesn't understand school. You know, they're farmers and they're carpenters and they don't understand what happens. And make fun of a suggestion in any way. So I think it's just so important to be careful with, or we will be frustrated with their lack of involvement. We could have created some of the problem ourselves. Last of all, inviting them into your world. Invite the board into your world. Help them understand what school is really like. Invite them to visit. Help them understand what school really is like when they ask questions. Be honest with the struggles of school, the ins and the outs. We're not always just strong and we can do it. I think there's times that we need to admit that, you know, I'm getting stressed out about this. I don't know what to do about this. And most times school boards want to get involved and help in those situations rather than, well, they don't understand, so I won't even let them into my world and understand the challenges that I'm facing. I want to pick up, since I have a couple minutes, I want to pick up one question here and go back to parental frustration. How should you as an administrator navigate a situation where the parent feels like the teacher's consequences are not fair? So the teacher is going to get this consequence, or did already, and they feel it is not fair. Do you gain more by backing down to keep the parent, or do you just, this is right, and you railroad it through? Somebody's going to say something.
A lack of communication there. You talked about keeping your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with a number of teachers that were not perfect, made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that every one of those teachers had a heart.
Okay.
And the parent didn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher didn't trust the parents, so I believe the parents had a heart too. So you gotta get that communication so that the parent understands the teacher has a heart, the teacher understands the parent has a heart.
All right. Very good point. Distrust will destroy your school quicker than anything, won't it? When there's just a distrust between administration, parents, teachers, the whole, all levels. I think there can be times, and I maybe again we don't really have time to talk about this to any length, but I think there can be times where finally the parents are sticking up for their child, and you know it, and they know that you think that. And you know what? You maybe do bend a little bit toward the parents. I can think of a time or two that that happened. Now, here's what we felt at school should happen. We talked to the parents, asked the parents, how do you feel about this? And they said, well, we just really don't think that's fair. You're in a tough position. What do you say? Well, you know what? We think it's fair. Well, of course you think it's fair. You wouldn't have decided that. But I can think of a situation that happened a while ago where it wasn't in my room, but just sitting down with the dad, here's what happened, here's how he saw it, and I tried to explain what happened. We feel this is fair consequence. It wasn't even a huge deal. It was rather trite to make an issue of, I felt. But I knew it was a fairly touchy situation with the parent, and I knew, and I decided at the end, I told him, I said, well, you know what? What we decided, I think, is fair, obviously, or we wouldn't have decided. But your cooperation and standing behind our discipline is more important than trying to give all the discipline we think should happen. So, yeah, we'll adjust it. That felt pretty weak, maybe. I don't know what you think. But it felt to me to win the dad in that situation. Now, again, if this would have been a huge issue where the board needed to come in and say, hey, guess what? Yes, this student is going to be suspended. This is a valid reason, but it was something way smaller than that, and it was a matter of adjusting some recess time. And so I think we need to be accessible to our patrons. And when they have a problem with what we're doing, then we hear them, and sometimes we do give grace that maybe we felt is outside. I would rather err on the side of grace than on the side of severity. Any questions or comments in closing? Yes.
Obviously, the parents are only, typically they're only hearing one side of the situation.
Right.
So the key there is communication, making sure that they see, you know, the full picture.
Yes.
And sometimes the teacher needs a little bit more input.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. Again, we cannot overstress that communication component. And I would encourage you as principals to be fairly quick to call a patron or to call them even into school. And I hope you have a culture where if you call a parent, that's not really a huge big deal. Now, I know it is that way. I chuckle sometimes when I call, yes, this is Anthony calling. Okay. Is your husband there? It has nothing to do with school. Oh, sure, he's right here. And I just chuckle, and I try to clear it right away if it has nothing to do with school. I'm like, because, you know what, getting a call from the principal. But if we have a culture where we have trust and we call over small things, I like to tell patrons sometimes that, you know, this is not a big deal, but I'm calling because I just want to keep the communication open. And the more we do that, or call for a meeting and say, look, it's not a big deal, but we want to sit down and talk so we don't have any misunderstandings. The better, the more we do that, for sure. All right, yes, go ahead.
So, real quick, you keep talking about you making a lot of phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak just real quickly on how often the teacher should be doing that versus the principal doing that?
Well, keep in mind, I shouldn't have said that, I guess. I mean, we have 130 students, so obviously if you have a fourth of those students, you're going to make a fourth of phone calls. All right,
it's not
so I'm just saying.
Phone calls. It's more of like, okay, so sometimes the teachers have asked me, like, is that your job to call them, or am I supposed to call about this little issue,
right,
like you were saying?
Right. Well, if it's something that the teacher emotionally, I feel, can handle, and it's a parent that we trust, we always have the parent. I have the teacher contact frequency, sure. Why don't you call and just say that was a discipline today and make sure it's all. If it's a touchy situation, maybe I'm a little quick to take the weight off of the teacher. They're scared to call. Plus, it's really the dad that needs to be talked to, and I'll never ask a lady teacher to call the dad about a problem. It doesn't feel quite right. And so there's where I probably tip toward me calling because of the man. I feel it's really the dad needs to get involved here. If it's homework issues or small discipline and the lady teacher to the mother, yes, it is preferred if that is, again, in your judgment, a viable option. No, thanks for asking. That's a good question. All right. Thank you for your time. God bless you. Excuse me.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.